Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire. This is episode 127. And as we talked about recently, we've got a new sound system and we've got a lot of new features, new topics we're going to be introducing to this podcast. This week, once again, I'm flying solo, but starting next week should have some more varied content for you. This week, we're going to talk about Florida's first statewide elected African-American, or first African-American to hold statewide office, Jonathan Clarkson Gibbs. Gibbs was born a free black in Philadelphia in 1821. His father was a reverend, a Methodist minister, Jonathan Gibbs I, and his mother was a Baptist. Jonathan Gibbs II, who's the subject of our podcast, Jonathan Clarkson Gibbs, was the oldest of four children. He grew up in a Philadelphia that was growing increasingly hostile to free blacks, free African Americans, and was rife with anti-abolitionist activity. In fact, abolitionism, which had been a key tenet of Quakerism and the people who settled Philadelphia and settled Pennsylvania, was now on the defensive in Philadelphia. New York, by the way, was very hostile to abolitionists. It was New York was closely connected to the South economically at the time. Boston was a place where you found a lot of abolitionists and a lot of strong. Maybe because it was the puritanical vibes in New England, but a lot of strong abolitionists who were also very strong, what we would call maybe today as evangelical or fundamental Christians, who were devoutly anti-slavery. After his father's death, when he was about 10 years old, Gibbs apprenticed to be a carpenter, but eventually the entire family converted to being a Presbyterian. And Gibbs was impressive to the Presbyterian Assembly, such that they gave him financing to become a Presbyterian minister, go off to school in New England, New Hampshire, actually, and was under the guidance of abolitionist leaders and abolitionist religious leaders while in New Hampshire. Gibbs moved to New York, which was a hotbed of abolitionism, New York's upstate New York, Albany area, in the 1850s, and he became a ordained minister. Returning to Philadelphia in 1859, he served as the pastor of the First African Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia from 1859 to 1865, and became active in the abolitionist movement and the Underground Railroad, etc. In fact, Gibbs delivered a famous sermon in Philadelphia at his church after Abraham Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation. Before the war ended, in early 1865, Gibbs left the First African Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia, went south to look after the needs of freedmen, and was in North Carolina for a time before arriving in Florida. Actually spent some time in South Carolina as well and got involved in Republican politics when he was in South Carolina. Then he came down to Florida. 1867 is when he moved to Florida, and he started a private school in Jacksonville. Now, because he had gotten involved in Republican Party politics in South Carolina, he had the political bug, and he moved quickly from religious work, missionary work, to politics in Reconstruction Florida, which at the time was controlled, it was the Reconstruction era, controlled by Republicans. Gibbs became instrumental in the Constitutional Convention of 1868, leading the so-called Mule Team, which was the radical Republicans, the most, I guess on an ideological scale, we talked about this last week, the most left-wing Republicans, right? There were more moderate and conservative delegates led by the governor, Harrison Reed. Ocean B. Hart, who we've talked about, Robert Bucciolato has talked about previously on this podcast. He was maybe in the more conservative faction, a more moderate faction led by Governor Reed. Still, even though most of Gibbs' motions and efforts at the convention failed, the end product was a liberal state constitution. However, even with that liberal state constitution, there were restrictions on black political power and on the Republican Party, even though the Republicans were in power. The Constitution permitted most former Confederates to vote and apportioned the legislature in such a way that the Democrats or conservative Republicans would be more successful and malapportioned black majority counties. And at the time, Florida's population was close to 50% African American. So it was not a great constitution from a representation standpoint. That would, those sorts of things would not be fixed until the Baker v. Carr decision of the Warren Court in the 1960s, the malapportionment issue, and then obviously the Voting Rights Act of 1965. But the Constitution did retain one really important item for African Americans. It directed the legislature to create a uniform system of public schools and a superintendent of public schools. Now, we know in time, Florida schools became segregated. And we know in time, there were huge inequities, especially after the Plessy versus Ferguson decision, Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court decision of 1896, that built in segregation and inequities between schools in African-American areas and schools in white areas. That was not the case when the public school system was begun in 1868. In fact, some of the evidence as to the chartering of the public school systems in these states during Reconstruction were the legal evidence that Earl Warren took in 1954 to create the opinion in the Brown versus Board of Education decision. Now, we know that Earl Warren had been was a politician, and that he had been the Republican governor of California. He had been the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party in 1948, running with Tom Dewey. We know that, unlike the other justices, Warren felt that politically, he was a politician, and he felt like you had to desegregate. And there were reluctant justices on that court that he inherited in 1954, after he was 1953 when he was appointed by Eisenhower, when Chief Justice Vinson passed away in 1954, when he's pushing the Brown decision and really kind of twisting the arms of his colleagues to create a unanimous decision so that the court is on record unanimously against segregated schools. Warren needed some legal precedence. Is the long point I'm going to. He for him, it was a political solution. He was a politician. He was felt racism was wrong, segregation was wrong, and he was determined to issue the Brown decision. There's no two ways about that. And I know that's the way a lot of conservatives have viewed it in history, that Warren was a politician and that he was determined to desegregate, even though there was nothing in the law that provided him the guidance to do that. That is actually not true. He cites in his majority opinion, in his decision, in the opinion, that schools were set up in some of these southern states under the charter without explicit segregation. And the segregation came later. Very important. I know I've diverted the conversation to talk about the Brown decision, but it's one of the most important things in American history. It's the Brown decision. And maybe we'll do a podcast in the future. It's not a Florida-specific topic, but we need to talk about Florida's reaction to the Brown decision. And to me, as a student of politics, one of the most fascinating things is how Earl Warren, as the Supreme Court, as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, but again, a former Republican governor of California, so he was a politician, understood the court had to speak unanimously and strike down segregation. So the Florida Constitution was one of those pieces one of those documents that did not explicitly segregate the schools when the public schools, the uniform system of public schools in 1868 were formed. So Gibbs was nominated for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives by the Radical Republicans. But there was a conservative Republican that ran and defeated him. Gibbs doesn't get elected to Congress, but he does get appointed Secretary of State by Governor Reed. And he served from 1868 to 1872, becoming the first African American to hold statewide office in Florida. Gibbs had considerable power. Secretary of State's office, as we talked about, and we actually talked about in the podcast, which Robert Bucciolato and I did, on Governor Reed and Governor Hart and that whole a controversy of multiple governors. The Secretary of State wielded incredible power at the time. And Gibbs' power and influence was widespread. And he gained the respect of African Americans and whites throughout the state. And in fact, there were, throughout the Reconstruction South, a lot of African American elected officials or appointed officials, statewide officials, etc. The vast majority of them were put in ceremonial positions where they didn't have much power. Gibbs is an exception. He may have been the most powerful black man politically in the country in that period, from 1868 to 1872. Then, in 1872, he gets appointed as the superintendent of public instruction and becomes a colonel in the Florida State Militia. So he's able to then shape the public schools in the image he and other radical Republicans want, which is in equality, in equilibrium. There may have been de facto segregation in a way because the communities were segregated, right? There were black majority counties, African American majority counties, white majority counties. But they're able to create a uniform system of public schools. Gibbs charters Florida, it's called Florida A&M now. At the time, it was the State Normal College for Colored Students, but a state university in Tallahassee for African Americans. Then suddenly, at 52, in 1874, while he's still the superintendent of public instruction or public education in the state of Florida, Jonathan Clarkson Gibbs, passes away. Sudden stroke, not quite sure what happened. He would be the last African-American statewide official in the state until the 1970s when Jesse McCrary, who was a really distinguished African-American lawyer, became the Secretary of State appointed by Reuben Askew, Governor Reuben Askew, this was 1977, to finish the unexpired term of Bruce Smathers, who was running for governor and lost in the Democratic primary in a crowded field that included Hans Tansler, Bob Graham. Bob Graham, of course, won that nomination, and several other luminaries. 1978 primary, Democratic primary for governor is one of the most fascinating races in the history of the state, in my opinion. But that was a race Bruce Smathers ran in, the son of former Senator George Smathers, and he passed away. So McCrary becomes the first African-American statewide official in Florida in 100 years. Since Gibbs passed away in 1874. So thank you for listening once again to the Florida History Podcast. That was a account of Jonathan Clarkson Gibbs' remarkable life and historic figure for African Americans and all Floridians. We'll be back with you again next week.